Committee of the Whole please come to order? Members of the 63rd, I'd like to take a brief personal privilege and introduce the Speaker of my house. My wife, Susie's up there in the gallery. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 49. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 49 from Representative Walters, an act relating to criminal procedure, providing confidentiality for the identity of persons or entities involved in administering an execution and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 49, confidentiality of participants involved in execution, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Escobel, Halverson, Crone, Miller, Bunnell, Winters. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Croker, and Pelkey, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Miller, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 49 do pass. And the representative from Natrona County will discuss the bill.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you is House Bill 49. What this does is hold in confidence anyone that's involved in an execution. I'm sure all of you have read the bill. On the first page, towards the bottom of the page, it discusses the members involved in carrying out an execution when a death sentence has been issued. It also discusses those folks supplying or manufacturing the products used or the substances used, as on the bottom of page 1 going on to the top of page 2. As you go read on down in page 2, it does include the fact that some of that information can be redacted and released. That would allow for an internal investigation or other processes to take place as necessary. So why is this needed? I'll read to you chapters, or 713-904, method of execution, subsection A. When the sentence of death is imposed by the court in any criminal case, the punishment of death shall be executed by the administration of continuous intravenous injection of a lethal quantity of an ultra-short-acting barbiturate alone or in combination with the chemical paralytic agent potassium chloride or other equally effective substance or substances sufficient to cause death until death is pronounced by a licensed physician according to accepted standards of medical practice. This sentence of death shall be executed within the time prescribed by law unless for cause shown the court or governor extends that time. Administration of the injection does not constitute the practice of medicine. So there's two places in there that really matters. The first is when it discusses what those drugs are. It discusses what they are. It does not tell them by street name or trade name. So the state is struggling to acquire those drugs from the drug manufacturers. This would allow those companies to be able to provide those drugs and those products to the state of Wyoming without the general public knowing who that supplier was, who was that company, or what were their trade names or their street names. In here it just discusses what types will be used. Also it says that a licensed physician will be there to pronounce that individual is dead. I don't think that it's necessary for the general public to know who that licensed physician was that makes that death proclamation. And so this bill is out there to protect those kind of individuals that are involved in that sort of situation. And with that, I would stand for any questions or call for the question if there are none.
Representative Baker. You got a Committee of the Whole amendment? Want to move that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 49 and ask for your favorable consideration. The purpose of this amendment, as discussed previously, is this bill does two things. One, it keeps the individuals involved in this process confidential, and secondly, it keeps the chemicals, exact chemicals, and the chemical manufacturers that are involved in this process confidential. So for me, I think it's a matter of transparency. I feel that it's appropriate for the general public to know what chemicals the government is using to kill its citizens. As was brought up in the committee, the individuals performing the executions, they're doing their job. But on the reverse, I think it's important that we know which chemicals are being used and which companies are providing those. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Minority Caucus Chairman Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The whole death penalty thing is a problematic venture for us as a civilized society. But recently, the manufacturers of most of these chemicals that we are using to build the death chamber cocktail are refusing to sell those, or even in some cases they're refusing to actually make those chemicals because they know that this is what the end result of the use of their chemistry and their products will be. And the companies have taken the moral high ground that they do not want to be part of this. So in this process, as we're burying this information, I wonder if we're being forthcoming to the companies that we're going to attempt to secure the constituent parts of the cocktail to perform an execution.
Representative Baker.
But just to follow up, I think it's appropriate that we know what chemicals are being used, and I don't know that it's necessarily going to affect the availability of these chemicals, whether it's confidential or not. So, you know, in my mind, I think it's important that we know which chemicals are being used.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge you to defeat this amendment. Currently, the state of Wyoming, our lone death row inmate has had his sentence sent back to court, and it's coming up again. Anyhow, it would have been a struggle to carry that out because the state of Wyoming would have struggled to be able to acquire those drugs for the very reasons that I've discussed earlier. The interesting thing about those companies that are struggling to sell the product when it's used for lethal injection, they're still manufacturing them readily, and they're doing so, and they are still selling them into any state that offers us doctor-assisted suicide. So these drugs are out there. They're available. It's just a matter of when they're used. And I wanted to make sure that everyone in the body is clear. This isn't a if you support the death penalty or don't support the death penalty type of bill. This bill is simply, we have that on the books. How can we carry out that process in the most efficient manner possible? I would urge you to defeat this amendment as it's necessary to make our process work properly.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendments, I think it's completely appropriate to keep the individuals involved confidential. They're just doing their job. It's not an easy job. It can't be something that's fun, and I think it would be inappropriate to subject those people to, you know, harassment from people for what they're doing. So I think it's completely appropriate to keep the individuals confidential and not disclose who they are. And this amendment would allow this. But I also think it's appropriate because the state can't compel a company to sell us a product that's used for the execution. So I think it's an agreement with good government to allow that that information out there, that the state does purchase the chemicals from such and such a company. And I completely support people's right to protest that company, to let the company know that they don't appreciate that. That's part of, you know, free speech in America and part of transparency in government. So I would encourage you to pass the amendment so that transparency is there and we're allowed, our society is allowed to have that open and honest discussion.
Being no further debate, we're voting on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 49. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has been defeated. We're back on the bill. Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious. I appreciate the intent of this, but I'm curious when it comes to the state using state funds. I think that we have some precedent in the state that if there's state funds associated, then you do have to disclose who those individuals were if they're employees of the state. Now, maybe you don't have to say what duties they were performing when they were receiving those funds. But I'm just going to take the specific example of a physician. If you have a physician within this process, it won't be very hard to elucidate who that, if we have access to the fiscal, to the financials, won't be very hard to figure out who is being paid during that period of time to be at that facility. And so I'm not sure this is getting to the entirety of the thing, and maybe this does address that fiscal issue, but I think we've had some recent court cases that have said, you know what, the fiscal issue is public records, who they're paid for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You no further debate? Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as I was reading through it, a thought occurred to me, and I just thought I'd throw this out as a question. Is the person being executed included in this, in confidentiality? And on line 14 on page 1, says execution of a death sentence as a member of the execution team. Is he a member of the execution team? And does that apply? Does this apply to him?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this bill, I do think we need to consider that all the things that we do in government or, you know, as politicians, as people, that we ought to be willing to stand up and say, this is what we're doing, and let it be known. I find it a little bit disturbing to think that if we think it is right and correct to have the death penalty, that we would nonetheless, and I have no problem with the person involved, but just think what statement it says, where we feel that we are going to put a person to death, but we are going to kind of hide under the cover of night as far as the drug and the process, so that people can't really criticize and say that that they don't like what we're doing. I think if we think that the death penalty is correct, we ought to be willing to be upfront about it. And when we get to the point where we're having to hide what we're doing, maybe we need to rethink this entire process.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To answer a couple of the questions that have been brought up, the fiscal aspect, there is maybe some ways it could be deduced who was part of the process, and that wouldn't be covered under this, and I don't know that you could ever truly get a 100% protection one way or the other. We're going about it trying to come up with the best solution possible to ensure that those people that are asked to carry out a process that may not be the greatest process in the world. I'm not here to defend or to promote that. I'm just here to try and make sure that those people that when they are asked to come forward and carry out a process, that they can have their information held in confidence. In terms of the person being executed as part of the execution team, they are not included in the execution team, as they are on the other side of the court or the field, if you will, and so they aren't included in this. And then in terms of hiding behind anything, I don't think the government's hiding behind anything. I think they're releasing times, dates, everything that's going to be taking place. They're just simply trying to help those that have been asked to come forward and carry it out. As I started out by saying, please keep this separate. This is not a bill whether you support or do not support the death penalty. It is absolutely not that case. We already have the death penalty on the books here in Wyoming. Others can bring bills forward if they would like to have that repealed, and we can have the debate about that at that point in time. This is simply saying, while it's on the books, how can we carry it out in the most efficient, expedient manner possible and do the best with a potentially bad situation? With that, I'd call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so at the recommendation that House Bill 49 do pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill 49 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 15. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 15 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, amending and conforming provisions relating to restoration of voting rights to felons, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 15, Restoration of Voting Rights by Department of Corrections, respectfully reports same back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those in favor, Representatives Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, and Nicholas. One no vote, Representative Burkhart. One excuse, Representative Stubson. Signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Miller, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 15 do pass. And Representative Halverson is going to manage the bill.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Joint Judiciary Committee brings you House Bill 15, a bill to automatically restore the right to vote to certain felons who have completed their sentence. Currently, Wyoming provides that felons convicted of nonviolent offenses may apply to the Board of Parole for the restoration of their right to vote. This application process is tedious for the ex-offender and overwhelming for an already busy parole board. It was the parole board that first supported this bill. On page 2 of the bill, you can see new language that says that the Department of Corrections shall issue a certificate of restoration of voting rights upon completion of sentence, including all conditions of parole and/or probation. Further, the Department of Corrections shall issue a certificate automatically. The onus of an application by the offender is removed by this bill. Note that this automatic restoration of voting rights is available only to those convicted of a nonviolent felony or nonviolent felonies arising out of the same occurrence or related course of events. That's all in current statute and does not change with this bill. As for the timing of the automatic restoration of the right to vote, you'll see on page 4, the Department of Corrections shall issue a certificate upon application by an offender who has completed his sentence before January 1st, 2016. Those persons who complete their sentences after January 2016 shall be spared the application process and shall be issued a certificate showing the right to vote has been restored. Persons who were convicted outside of Wyoming or under federal law shall be issued a certificate of voting rights restoration, but only upon application. On the bottom of page 4, you'll see that we call for the department's denial of a certificate to be final. But, of course, that does not eliminate the person's right to challenge that denial in the courts. You see that the clerk of the district court and the Division of Criminal Investigation shall cooperate with the Department of Corrections in the determination of a person's eligibility for the restoration of voting rights. On the top of page 5, the bill charges the department with notifying the Secretary of State of the restoration of voting rights and the clerk of the district court if the offender was convicted in Wyoming. The committee discussed the definition of nonviolent felony and the fact that other states might have different ideas as to what constitutes a nonviolent felony. So we settled on sticking to Wyoming's interpretation as defined in statute. On page 6 and the top of page 7, the bill takes the parole board out of the restoration of voting rights. Under definitions on page 7, that is existing language. On page 8, the bill adds any document relating to the restoration of voting rights to the list of items which shall not be part of a person's criminal history record. Also, the bill deletes the parole board and the governor as part of the vote restoration process. The bill adds voting rights to civil rights in defining qualified elector. On page 9, the bill adds the Department of Corrections to the Secretary of State and the Parole Board as entities charged with sharing information to verify voter qualifications. Finally, the bill adds Clause K to the duties of the Department of Corrections. It shall issue certificates of voting rights restoration pursuant to the above. This bill is effective January 1, 2016, to give the Department of Corrections, the Secretary of State, and the Clerk of District Court time to coordinate a policy implementing the automatic restoration of voting rights. That's the bill. Note that this bill does not restore the right to serve on a jury or the right to hold elective office. The debate on the restoration of those rights is for another day. Passing this bill will take Wyoming off the list of 9 states which require ex-felons to take actions which are often cumbersome to reinstate their voting rights. During testimony, we learned that under the current application system, only 0.25% of ex-felons have their voting rights restored. We think the new automatic system of voting rights restoration will improve this number. Also, it was demonstrated to the Judiciary Committee that the restoration of voting rights reduces recidivism among felons who have satisfactorily completed their sentences as they become more invested in society. The personnel in the office of the secretary down on the first floor are satisfied with the bill we've developed. Testimony included the question, when does the punishment end? We hope this bill goes a long way to answering this question, and I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good bill. I just had a question, maybe more of a technical nature. So on page 2 with what we've deleted out and what we've put in. After January 1, 2016, this is automatic. I think that's great. If you were eligible for this prior to January 1, 2016, we'll say upon application. But in the language we've deleted out what was required in the application. Was it discussed? Does the department have a rule and regulation or something already in place so they can deal with that, or is that something maybe we should address?
Representative Howerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've decided to leave the parameters of an application up to the new entities involved in the restoration of voting rights, namely the Secretary of State, the District Court Clerks, and the Department of Corrections. Right now, everything is geared toward an application to the Parole Board, who will no longer be in the loop.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, and just a quick follow-up on that. It doesn't mean we'll have a different set. I mean, the district courts are their own area. I'll be careful what I say. So will each district court have their own rule on what the application will be, or do we just have a statewide application that'll, do you understand what I'm saying? But who's got the authority to promulgate that rule if that's how we're going to do that?
Representative Howerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is anticipated that the Secretary of State, the Department of Corrections, and the Association of District Clerks will be involved in developing a statewide application process.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of concerns with this bill. Currently, as it was mentioned, there is a process already whereby a felon can have their rights restored. What I hear in this bill is that we're going to piecemeal this, that the right to vote will come back automatically, but if you want to go for your other rights or appeal for your rights, then you still have to appear before the parole board. So that's number one. And I know this is this deals with non-violent penalties. But what? Let's think about that. What about fraud? Let's say you have a high school principal who embezzles $100,000 and is convicted. Do we want that individual, after they get out of prison, to go ahead then and have their voting rights restored? I mean, after all, that's a high-profile position. It's esteemed. Is that the kind of precedent that we want to set? So, again, those are my concerns. I don't think that this is the correct route to go. So, thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In favor of the bill. I think it's important to answer, kind of respond to that last example. You've got somebody who was convicted of a crime. He serves his time. He serves his parole. The sentence is over. He's paid the penalty for his crime. I don't think it's appropriate to say, well, the penalty for this crime is 5 years in jail plus you lose other things for the rest of your life. If it is, maybe we should just include that in the statute as part of the sentencing for the bill. Someone has paid their debt to society. They've served their time, and it includes all time, not just the time in jail, but the probation and everything else. And I think it's completely appropriate at the end of that time to say, okay, now they finished with that. Now let's give them a chance to be a citizen again and have input in the government and their say. And if they screw up again and get thrown behind bars, then they lose the privilege of voting again.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I would have is, who's maybe an idea of crimes that have been committed, and who would be eligible for this? I'm not sure I'm clear on who all of those are and what the percentages might be of each type of crime that's there, or a general idea of who's going back in with voting rights. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The statutes outline what constitutes a nonviolent felony, and as for the numbers in each category that could be eligible for automatic restoration of voting rights or application if they were convicted prior to 2016, those numbers did not come to us in committee, but I'd be happy to get them for you.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, just a few comments on this issue. I don't know how all your districts are that you guys walk during campaign time, but in mine, every campaign season, I find more and more people that tell you I can't vote, so don't worry about talking to me. They're disenfranchised, and most of them don't even understand there's a process. You know, I ask them always how long has it been? You know, do they off probation and all that? And we need them for them to get back into society as we know it and get involved with things. And I might remind you all that every time you look at references to voting, it says voting rights. It doesn't say voting privileges. And so it is a right. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have had people, as I've gone around, talking about this same problem. I was very refreshed when I saw this bill here, and I think as you look at the parole board, I think they would be very eager to have this because they're going through this pretty regular, and I think this will cut down the workload, and they've already proven that they've carried out their sentence. So I think this is really a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Chairman Miller.
Seeing no further discussion, I'm going to go ahead and move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. If you look at the bill, there is a fiscal note on the bill. The bill itself did not ask for an appropriation. So I bring this amendment here to fulfill the request from the the folks that are impacted by this to take care of their anticipated cost of this. And that amount is $25,800. It's outlined in your physical note. Be happy to try to answer any questions on that, but kind of came from the horse's mouth. So I ask for your favorable consideration on the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do have a question and a suggestion. In that the $25,800, and as your explanation had it, it's insignificant relative to the budget process. So I would suggest that you include a waiver of having a referral to the Appropriations Committee.
Chairman Miller.
Question.
Question being called on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 15. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 15 is adopted. Back on the bill. Question being called on the bill. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's recommendation that House Bill 15 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 15 is passed Committee of the Whole. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have the privilege of the floor?
Seat.
I would like to recognize the Fremont County Clerk, Julie Freese, in the South Gallery.
Welcome to the House, Representative Lindholm.
Privilege of the floor.
Seat.
I'd like to recognize Tammy Hooper, Chairman of the Wyoming State Republican Party.
Welcome to the House. There's a few of them here. Representative Burkhart.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Proceed, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in the South Gallery, we have Gwen Bartlett, the Carbon County Clerk.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 29. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 29 from Representative Byrd, an act relating to marijuana possession, amending penalties for marijuana possession as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 29, Marijuana Possession, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Pelkey, and Winters. Those who voted no, Representatives Crone and Pinnell. Signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 29 do pass, and the Representative Byrd will be presenting the bill.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the House, I bring you today House Bill 29, Marijuana Possession, and I would like to defer moving the standing committee amendment until I explain the bill, if that's appropriate with the chair.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 29, Marijuana Possession. It basically deals with lowering the penalties for possession of small amounts. I can't emphasize enough that this bill is not, repeat, is not legalization of marijuana. If you are caught with a possession of this controlled substance, there is a penalty because you are breaking the law. What we are doing is addressing in this bill the growing concern about people who are caught or either purposefully or inadvertently with small amounts of marijuana in their possession, and the penalty phase of the crime not being consistent or being way over the top for what the social norm and acceptance of this small amount of marijuana would be. So if you follow me, I'm going to skip through the bill because the first page is fairly boilerplate. We're going to move on to page 2, which has some definitions. And because of my cold medication, you'll never understand me if I try to pronounce these long words. Just for sake of discussion, I'm going to call it THC instead of tetrahydrocannabinol and other things like that. We do have one version, one derivative of this, which is dravenol, which is legal. This bill does not concern the dravenol. It only is concerned with the THC marijuana and the grown variety of the plant. It also does take into account the synthetic equivalents of marijuana in this section. But what we're focusing on here is the penalty phase. So if we skip all the way to page 3, is really the meat of the bill and what we're looking at. Page 3, line 1, the existing language is $5,000. The bill changed that to $3,000. The Standing Committee Amendment is going to address these things. We are going to return to some of the original language in the bill. And so that $5,000 will come back. We move down to subsection A, except for as provided in subparagraph G of this paragraph, controlled substance in plant form, no more than 3 ounces. This is the dictate for the fine above of $5,000. Subsection G, for marijuana, no more than 3 ounces, but greater than 1 ounce. That is a description of the amount of marijuana that applies to that $5,000 fine. We move down to Romanet 6, and has in his possession marijuana for a second offense. And then we go to subsection A, in an amount no more than 1 ounce, but greater than 1/2 ounce, shall be subject to a civil penalty. Your copy reads $100. The Standing Committee Amendment will change that to $5. Subsection B, in the amount of no more than 1/2 ounce, shall be subject to a civil penalty of $50. The Standing Committee Amendment changes that to $250 for a first or second offense. We go to page 4. And Romanet 7, and has in his possession marijuana for a third subsequent offense in the amount of no more than 1 ounce, shall be subjected to the following. I'm going to skip over this because the Standing Committee Amendment makes quite a lot of changes here into this section. But basically, the idea here was to get mandatory counseling, because if you're caught more than 3 times for the same offense, the idea is I think you need to be in front of somebody who can recommend some sort of counseling, some sort of diversion program. The e-ticket or the fine, the civil fine, is just not probably where we want to go with that at that point. So there's changes inside the... again, I keep referring to the Standing Committee Amendment, but we'll go through this as it is. A fine not less than $500, but no more than $1,000. Imprisonment for not more than 30 days. And Section C, probation on a term not to exceed 1 year. Probation under this subparagraph may be in addition or in lieu of the fine, imprisonment in this paragraph. And then we just have the enacting clause. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the substance of the bill. At this particular time, I would like to move Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 29 for your consideration.
Okay. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 29. The fine gentleman from Laramie County explained the changes in there. We went back to some of the old language in the first few pages, and we increased the fine levels substantially from what he had in the original bill. So if there's any questions on any of that, the gentleman from Laramie County or myself will answer them.
Chairman Zwanen Serdant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just some rationale of maybe if there is any data based in other states or why the certain percentage fines were in the original bill or why the committee felt to raise them up to a higher number, if that's based on another state or any data out there, or we just took a straw poll in committee and decided those would be good fines. I just needed a little more information on why we're setting the fines at those levels in the standing committee amendment.
Representative Burt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The discussion in committee about raising the fines, there were no references to any other states using these penalties. There were no reference to existing penalties in Wyoming statute. The only thing I can tell you is in the original draft of the bill, the numbers that I used and the reference point that I use is in the handout that came into your trays just a few minutes ago. It says HB 29, and it is a copy from the Wyoming statutes 35.5.235, subsection C, Romanets I through triple I, or 1 through 3, which indicate convictions for an open container of alcohol, first, second, and third violations. So using this as a template, that's how the original fine structure was derived. But I cannot say that the committee came up with any definitive chart that would reference those.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the committee, we had a little discussion about these fees. The original fees proposed in the original draft of the bill were based on no scientific data or based on anything that was available in the nation. Otherwise, the real crux of this bill is just to move away from a criminal penalty. In my opinion, I think if a fine for the first time offense is $50, there's no deterrence there. We're not trying to encourage people to use this substance. Basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to negate the fact that currently there's a criminal penalty associated with this. So I think the fees, you know, and the other thing in reference to this handout that we have about alcohol. Alcohol is legal still. Remember, this substance is still going to be illegal, so we don't want to encourage people with such a small minimal fee or fine.
Representative Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question to the presenter, and I apologize for my ignorance. I asked my desk mate, and she's indicated how much an ounce of perfume is, but we're not sure how much an ounce of marijuana is. And I'm not implying that you would know, but maybe through your studies that you could help us to understand how much that is. I really don't know.
Minority Caucus Chairman Byrd.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, if you would have asked me that question about 40 years ago, I might have been able to tell you, and maybe accurately, unfortunately, but I do not know because of the industry and what they've done. We have geneticists making varieties of this and botanists and all sorts of people making different versions of it. And to be frank, I know that it sells for quite a bit if you buy the the perfume that would have the number with it. I guess if you bought the equivalent version of that in marijuana, it would be quite pricey, but I really don't have the values of the product.
Representative Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, and I wasn't talking about the how much in price. I mean, just volume. I don't know. Can you make a joint out of an ounce? Can you?
Chairman, this one is Susie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's approximately 60 to 70 joints in 1 ounce of marijuana. And I know this because we actually had a discussion similar to this bill 6 years ago in this body, and I did the research on an amendment. But depending on who rolls and how much, it's approximately 60 to 70 joints in 1 ounce.
Representative Gate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, as far as repeat offenses go, if a person is caught with this and fined appropriately and let go, does it ever time out for them, or does that offense follow them through the whole rest of their life? If they're caught 50 years later with another ounce, are they fined as though they're a repeat offender?
Representative Byrd, we're on committee of the whole amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, it does not, because if you are caught with the small amounts, you are treated as a civil penalty, the same thing it would be as a traffic violation. However, these are tracked within the system. So if you become a repeat offender over and over, you are bound to probably get in trouble and eventually end up in front of a judge.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I look at these costs, penalties, the question was asked, how are they with surrounding states? And nobody knew. So my question is this going to encourage the use because they're lower? And if that's the case, law enforcement, it's going to have an impact there. So I'm just wondering, are these numbers set so there's a penalty associated with it and it's not going to encourage more? That's my question.
Minority Caucus Chairman Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer that, the marijuana is already in this state. It's already being used. It's already being transported in here. This is not addressing those people who would transport this in here for resale, repackaging, and basically large amounts in some sort of dealer capacity. This particular change in the law is aimed at those inadvertent travelers, be it accidental or willful neglect, when they travel to the state that's south of us, partake in some experimentation like 80-90% of young people do, some older people do, and for the lack of discussion or for this particular discussion, let's just say they forgot to empty the ashtray on the way back into Wyoming. And somewhere down the road they're stopped for a traffic violation. The law enforcement will see that there is residue or there is marijuana left in the ashtray, and that is a convictable offense of being in possession. That is much less than an ounce. There are not 60 joints inside this individual's car. I believe at the discretion of law enforcement, if he saw 60 joints or something like that, there would be a forthcoming arrest, because that comes underneath a different statute in the law, manufacture distributing. We are not addressing that here. We are addressing the small amounts that people would bring across the state line, accidentally or purposefully. I have a stack of emails from people writing me testimonials that tell me that they do not want to be a criminal. They do not want to break the law. But they bring small amounts of marijuana back into this state because they have a medical condition that, through all of the known regimens of medical and chemotherapy, are not working or render them in such a state that they are physically unable to carry out a day's work. They found out that smoking small amounts of marijuana tend to reduce the pain and return them to be a functional individual. But because we have it illegal, they live in fear every day that they may be arrested. And if they're arrested multiple times, considering the way that the statute is written, that could be converted into a felony, and then they have a serious problem, a real serious problem. So I have a stack of other testimonies that tells me about people who have moved to moved to the state, to the south again, for medical purposes. I have testimonials from people who have been traveling through the state. One of the most telling is a veteran who's disabled, who is visiting family in the state to the south. A snowstorm closed that interstate that runs through the mountains in the middle of that state, so he decided that he would drive through our state and was stopped out near Green River. Or that state where the river's green, that city where the river's green, I'm sorry. Cold medications.
Representative Byrd, try and keep the debate germane to the amendment. We're on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But anyway, I'll save that for the middle of the bill, but the Standing Committee Amendment changes the fine amounts. It respects that we do not want an arrest. And as the bringer of the bill, I'm okay with that. So I would, at this particular time, I would recommend an aye vote on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to the question posed by the gentleman from District 19, in committee we learned that Nebraska, recently the state to the east of us, recently decriminalized this substance. And I think before we get to second reading, we can probably get those numbers for you.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard some questions. I don't know if they were answered, but on the bottom of page 2, with passing the amendment, the language stays in there, and it defines currently what the judge can do. And currently the judge can do imprisonment up to 12 months and also impose a fine up to $1,000. So it's up to the judge at this point for the amount of fine to be imposed. What we do with this bill is we're actually setting the amounts based on the amount of drug that's in the arrest, and also if it's the first, second, or third time. So it takes that discretion away from the judge, and I just wanted to make sure the body understood that.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On in support of this bill, I just ask you to look at the fiscal note. Each year of incarceration per inmate will cost the state approximately $45,625. Including medical costs. The cost for community supervision of an offender is approximately $2,000 per year. If they're going to be habitual, they're going to keep getting caught, then they will get sentenced, they will do their time. If they get caught once, it's going to get their attention. I believe the fines were a little low. I'm glad that amendment passed. But if you give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves, and they will go to prison. But maybe we can stop people from going to prison. Save the Department of Corrections some money. Save us some money. So on and in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question I have in light of that last question is, as a practical matter, do we know how many, if any, people are actually in jail for these amounts less than an ounce? Does this make any practical difference to what's happening as far as punishment out there?
Representative Pelkey.
I believe on the fiscal note, Mr. Chairman, I believe on the fiscal note, LSO was unable to come up with a precise figure, but they did make reference to the number of people who were under community supervision. My quick calculation on that 680-some folks that are there means that it's costing the state somewhere around $1.4, $1.5 million to monitor and supervise those folks. The beauty of this measure is that it removes that burden from the state, and we can concentrate our criminal resources on offenses that pose a danger to the community.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask, what is the danger to the community? And I go back to my days of teaching school and law enforcement bringing a drug prevention program into the school, and this was always identified as one of the gateway drugs. So now we're going to make it less of a penalty, which will increase the likelihood of it being in the homes, increase the likelihood of children getting their hands on it, increase the likelihood of addictions, and quite frankly, the gateway to other drugs. Are we crazy? I go to national committees, and I hear about people from the state, hear from people, both in administrative and legislative roles, from the state south of us, and also clear on the West Coast, who totally legalized it. And they said the social costs are tremendous. They're out of sight. That what the state is paying for other things because of it. And so, you know, we kind of explored some of those. Ski Patrol has tripled, and they're still not catching it. All of the accidents that are happening. They're not responding in a timely manner because of the amount of accidents that are happening because of the amount of substance abuse. I had a doctor that asked me to meet with him, and he's a pain specialist, and he asked if I would consider supporting this bill or one to totally legalize medical marijuana. And my position is, okay, if it has ingredients that are better, that fill more pain receptors, then let's let the drug companies go and extract them and prescribe them and control them. Why are we bringing something that is illegal, that is a gateway drug, that's detrimental to society and costly to society, and we're going to decrease the penalty, increase the access, for what? On and against the bill.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just might have a little information on some of the charges that the good speaker pro tem asked about. I had LSO do a fact sheet. I can share this with you if you're interested. But a couple things. You know, there's charges. When somebody's picked up, they're many times charged with multiple offenses. But then I wanted to look really at the convictions and the incarceration, because I always hear this, that our jails are full of people who had one joint in their pocket. And so really the numbers here in the 2013 is the most recent year. And so, and you can see it by county. It's broken out by county. There's 124 people that served time across the state for marijuana convictions. And then, so what convictions are they? Well, 33 of those were for possession. Doesn't tell how much, but 33 were possession out of the 124. So the vast majority were distribution, conspiracy, manufacture, delivery, those kind of offenses. So it was really the businessmen who are in the marijuana business who are serving time in jail. And I think, you know, there's other, by far the biggest convictions in this state and charges are still methamphetamine. I mean, that's number one still out there. So it's not like marijuana is dominating all of our drug work and all those kind of things. So just a little on that. I would just add, too, you know, we do every year a youth risk survey across the state of kids, and I just think the message is really huge. And to back up what the good chairman of health and labor talked about, you know, our health budget's our number one budget, biggest budget we have, over $1 billion. And the number two item in there is mental health substance abuse. And so we've raised taxes on cigarettes. We've tried to do all the prevention we can and mental health and trying to get people to not use. And I worry about the signal that this sends, whether it's a misdemeanor or crime or whatever, but I just think it sends a horrible signal when we're trying to reduce substance use and abuse and all those things that go with it to maybe somehow say, smoking a plant, another plant is going to be okay with a token fine. And so I'm going to vote no on the bill, and I encourage you to as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment on and for the bill, but to comment regarding some of what has been said so far. Decriminalization is not legalization. That's not what this bill is about. We're not legalizing it, nor are we advocating for the use of it. But I would like to mention that this has been done before, decriminalization, and instead of it being a gateway into just a bunch of people using, it's actually worked in a country where they decriminalized and drug abuse is down by over half 12 years later. It actually works, folks. Secondly, the biggest gateway drug is not marijuana, it's alcohol. I don't see any bills regarding that.
Representative Edwards.
I would urge this body to vote against this bill. You look at the what we're doing here is removing the real penalty for the substance abuse. We're sending a message to our youth that it's okay to do this, and we're also sending the same message that we think it's okay that the public in this state will follow the same path as what the state to the south of us has already done. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I spent my morning talking about alcohol, and my afternoon is now being consumed by marijuana, so there's a gateway to a lot of different places. What I just want to say is if you look at the laws around the country, is that marijuana is becoming more prevalent. And what happens, the laws that we have right now are strong. I went on a ride along with an HP, and they talk on a regular basis that they have people that are coming across the state that have prescriptions for marijuana, and unsuspecting to them is the officers, who are very friendly, say, "Do you got any marijuana on you?" And they says, "Yeah, I have a prescription." And the next thing they know is that they have a record. They should know better. Our kids should know better. But what happens is what we have now is that we have high fines and we make it into a felony. This is decriminalization. We're not promoting it. We're just recognizing the change in the scenery, and we don't want to hurt somebody that inadvertently wasn't trying to abuse the drug. And that's an oxymoron, I believe.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just did a brief search, and to look up what the average price would be in the state to our south, and I found it quite interesting, because it sounds as though 1 ounce is just a very, very minimal amount, and yet 1/2 ounce in one city in the center of the state to the south is $130. The average price, this is as of yesterday, was $243. And so and we've already had one individual speak toward around 60 joints one could roll out of an ounce. I didn't know that I would ever say that particular phrase out of my own mouth, but I just did. But what's really interesting in just trying to do a brief Google search, it's just a little over half of that. So these are not insubstantial amounts. That's the point I want to make. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Minority Caucus Chairman Burt.
Thank you. I'd like to make a few comments and address some of my colleagues' concerns here. About this being a gateway drug, for one, and unraveling portions of our society. The intent of this legislature is not to address those social ills. They're already woven into the fabric of our society. Those young individuals who use this on a regular basis, this is not going to affect them. They're still going to find the way to get hold of this. The users, the addicts, if you will, the people who are addicted to this, this is not directed towards them. Those people, doesn't matter what the substance, whether it be marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamine, they will always find a way to get the drug that satisfies their need. What we are addressing here is those people that are using marijuana and they've gone to another state and experimented with it and still happen to have some on their person when they come back to Wyoming, either purposefully or accidentally, and then they encounter law enforcement. Or those individuals who are trying to take care of a medical problem through the advice of a physician, keeping in mind that the physician still can't prescribe that, but they can advise you. If all the regimens of classic pharmacological treatments are not working, I guess you have to experiment. You have to think outside the box. There's plenty of research out there that says marijuana and its derivatives do work for pain control, do work for a lot of other things. I can only tell you from anecdotal experience because I don't smoke it. At least in a long time ago, I haven't. But for those people who that it does make their life better, or for those young people who have gone someplace and experimented with this, and you know how young people are, they're short-sighted, because we were all in that boat once, get some ways crosswise with the law. This addresses that, takes out the jail time and leaves them with a fine. Something that they can pay, something that, it will leave a mark on them. Like, these new fines are not low. So the system will work if we allow it to. And keep in mind, we were talking about the very young people. The underage, we're not addressing their involvement here. Youth in possession is still against the law, any way you look at it. So, again, the emphasis here is on those people who are now forced to go outside the state of Wyoming and get medical treatment and bring it back here under illegal circumstances and use it for their own medical. They're not bringing in pounds of it. Most of them are not even bringing in ounces of it where you can roll 60 joints, and actually that's news to me that you could actually roll that many out of an ounce. I didn't know that either. But if we incarcerate these people, it was just brought to my attention, we have 33 people in jails right now at $45,000 a year. If you expand that out, that's $1,485,000 a year that we are paying in costs to incarcerate these people for a victimless crime, because these are individuals doing this by themselves. So at this point, I would recommend an aye vote, and I would call for the question.
Representative Pownell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To understand, if you are picked up for a small amount of marijuana, you're not automatically convicted of a felony. It's a misdemeanor. It's like if you're picked up for possession of beer or open container. It's a misdemeanor. So to clarify, if you are picked up for a first-time offense on a small amount of marijuana, it's not a felony, and that's basically what we're talking about. And then, of course, then you have the others on delivery and things of that nature, which is a felony.
Representative Pelkey.
I just want to clarify, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to clarify a bit on that last comment. Any amount under 3 ounces, whether it's 2.9 ounces all the way down to the residue in a pipe, can be charged as a misdemeanor. That penalty is $1,000 and up to 1 year in jail. I'd have to concede that that on a first offense, that's a rarity, but that potential exists right now, that a young person caught with a small amount of marijuana in the state could be subject to a penalty of $1,000 and up to 1 year in the county jail. Beyond that, three ounces, we go into felony territory. This bill doesn't address that question. But we're looking at some serious consequences for a young life. In essence, what the argument here is that we are, the status quo right now is the law is creating more harm than the harm it's trying to protect society against. And what we're hoping to do is correct that. This bill is not intended to encourage young people to go out and smoke marijuana. It doesn't encourage them to go down to Colorado and buy vast amounts. What it does encourage is for society to react in an appropriate manner and not saddle a young person with the brand of a drug conviction just as they're getting started off on life. As Representative Byrd once put it, we are willing to stamp our young people with a, you know, locking them into a life of mediocrity, largely because they're going to have a record and that'll keep them from going on and doing other things in their life. I would encourage support for this bill.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to bring up a couple of points. First of all, elaborating on what Representative Winters said with the amount of the possession of marijuana, there's a lot of different strains of marijuana these days, and they could be more or less potent, and so the amount could have different effects. Also, I'd like to bring our attention to the fact that to poach big game, we have, that is a felony, your second conviction. So there are real life consequences to our actions, whether they be poaching or using drugs or carrying drugs in our car. And some of our kids have to learn the hard way sometimes. Secondly, as with our game and fish bill we saw a little while ago, we were leaving some discretion to the judges, and we have a judicial system. And so I just want us to think about those things as we make this decision. Thank you.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to give the body a bit of data that comes from my home county, which is in a couple of miles, honestly, from the border, and what has happened since the county to the state has legalized marijuana. In 2010, in my county, there were 62 marijuana seizures. In 2014, it's more than tripled. Right? It's more than tripled. Also, on campus, our police chief has said that there are four times the arrests in the dorms than there were previous to 2010, and that 98% of all of the drug arrests on campus are for this small amount of marijuana possession. You know, again, going back to the current penalty. The current penalty is up to $1,000 and or a year in jail. And I typically read the crime blotter in my local newspaper, and the typical fine is about $750. And so this is real, right? This is real, and it's happening certainly in my county, if not in yours, in terms of the number of for overwhelmingly young people who are getting arrested, paying these fines, and now have a kind of a criminal drug conviction on their record with a high fine. Now, this bill addresses one element of that, and I hope that you seriously consider it as we move to kind of rethinking this whole issue.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 29 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Nope.
No.
House Bill 29 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. So the Chief Clerk will now call roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell. Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay. Gay excused. Greer.
No.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Jennings.
Kasparik. No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Pennell.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Gay. Excused to.
Aye.
Excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 22 aye, 38 no.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 29, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Good thing my wife left, because then she'd be telling me, I told you you were hard of hearing. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 58. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 58 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to Medicaid, creating a grant program to assist developmental disability service providers in complying with a revised Medicaid waiver program as specified, providing grant criteria, establishing an account, requiring reports, providing an appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 58, Developmental Disability Services Transition Grants, respectfully report saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 58 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. the standing committee amendment, we could dispense with that pretty quickly. It adds the word employers or employers behind the word providers. There are people who employ people who are providers that need to apply for these grants as well. And the rest of it is just pretty much cleanup. And with that, I would turn it over to, I would ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment and call for the question unless there are any questions.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 58. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the good chairman of Appropriations to present House Standing Committee 2 on this bill.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the handoff. I didn't know I was going to, so I'm ready, though. Appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. And so, Mr. Chairman, what we did is cut the funding down then to $1 million and allow this for 1 year instead of pulling this out 3 years. And so that was really it. And I tell you, Mr. Chairman, your Appropriations Committee had, you know, we had some serious reservations. We thought that if we really wanted to, first of all, well, I can only speak on the amendment for right now, Mr. Chairman. So we reduced the price of this from the 2.5 to 1 million and shortened the time down to 1 year. This bill will still remain in effect for the 3 years. So if folks wanted to come back and felt it was worthy to add money to it, you'll have that opportunity next year. But this is certainly more than enough funding to get through this first year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Harvey? No? Question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Back on the bill. Chairman Harvey.
Mr. Chairman, I would turn the floor management of the bill over to Representative Larson.
Representative Larson Lloyd.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And folks, to give you a little background for the premise of the bill, we need to look back a little bit historically and understand that and see how we've worked with people with developmental disabilities over the maybe perhaps last three decades. Back in the 60s and 70s, you've seen a large majority of those people with developmental disabilities being institutionalized or handled in their own private homes and taken care of. And then you started to see a transformation in the 70s and through the 80s to where these people who could really function and be part of our communities were transitioned out of those institutions into community-based programs. And Wyoming has a number of those community-based programs throughout the state. And as they transitioned into those programs to where they could be more a part of our society, be integrated in and have day-to-day lives very similar to what the rest of the world has, we've seen the community and home base providers really step up and meet the needs of that in our state. And so what they've done is they acquired assets, group homes to where a number of these clients could live together, and they would provide a type of a work setting where they have what we call a cottage work setting and do a number of little programs that would provide supplemental income to them and make them develop skills, help them to develop skills and provide opportunities to grow and to have income. What we are seeing now is that once again that whole idea behind how we work with people with developmental disabilities is changing again. And Medicaid actually changed in March of 2014. The federal government passed the new rules for the types of services that can be covered through Medicaid funded and home community-based services. The new rule will help make sure that people who use waiver of home community-based services are truly integrated into their communities. states will not be allowed to use federal Medicaid dollars to pay for our home and community-based services in settings that isolate people from the community or that do not show respect for people's rights to privacy, dignity, and self-determination. States may need time to create their settings into companies so that Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services allowed states to create a five-year transition plan. Our state had to draft the transition plan and give our stakeholders, our home and community-based providers, including people with disabilities, family members and guardians and providers and other advocates, the opportunity to comment on the transition plans. Now our state's transition plan is in place and it's been submitted to CMS. And so the Department of Health is really wanting to make sure that we move forward into integrating more completely people with developmental disabilities into our mainstream communities. And so the new standards are going to require that we integrate into community, that the individual has choices, the individual has rights, autonomy, and a choice regarding the services of the providers. And so some of the questions that participants living in provider-owned settings, and I might call time out and just have you, there is a handout that will kind of help you better understand, and I'm referring to this, and also another handout that's from the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities that we received today. But the participants, according to our plan, in this state, have the same rights and responsibilities as regular tenants under state law. So some of these people with development of these folks are citizens of the state that have developmental disabilities and living in a group home have the same responsibilities as and rights as regular tenants under state law, including protections against being kicked out of their home without notice. They have the right to privacy in their bedrooms and living rooms, including the ability to lock their own doors and have a key or lock access. Only appropriate staff should have extra keys to these rooms. People also need to have the right to choose their own roommates and choose their own furniture and decorations, have the freedom of support and control in their own daily schedules, have access to food at any time, and have the right to have visitors at any time. As you kind of contemplate some of these changes that you're seeing being required by our new transition plan, and if you're one of those community and home-based providers and you've built your model on that 1970s and 1980s model where you are pre-1980s model where you had group homes where you had a number of clients living in that group home and they didn't have a choice of who their roommate was, they didn't their dining schedules are set according to the schedule of the provider. And these were wonderful services and it brought us a long way, but now we're requiring them to change. So with that change, we've kind of created, we kind of have a little bit of a dilemma because our providers have not had a rate change in their funding model for 7 years. We had a rebasing 3 years ago, but the legislature didn't, and it was recommended. The legislature at that time didn't approve it. So we've placed this mandate on our providers to change their business model to meet the requirements that we as a state and Medicaid has for them. And it's really put them in a predicament on how to do that, because if they don't meet the models, then they don't get Medicaid reimbursement. So that's a precursor to the bill, and I apologize if I've taken too long to do that. But this bill provides a grant program to assist the developmental disability service providers or employers with the resources to learn how they can adjust their business model and to meet the requirements of these of the new regulations. And so we've appropriated through the amendment today $1 million for this first year that the providers can apply to the Department of Health for to if they're eligible to, and I was trying to look here, to employ consultants, to meet with experts, to send their people out to get better educated on current business models, because we think it's really critical that they continue to meet the needs that we have in our state for this portion of our population. I might back up and also share with you that as we, who served on the facility task force over the last year, are going to put even more responsibility on those community-based services to take care of those people who are coming onto the waivers program and have a right and a need to have these services from the state, because we will be moving forward and just using the state facilities like the Life Resource Center as just a safety net, just a very small population that cannot be taken care of. And so we'll be dependent on these providers throughout the state to meet the needs of these citizens and fulfill the obligation that we as a state have. So with that, I would take questions, and at this time, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My former desk mate would have been pleased with me standing here today. She's been an advocate for developmental disabilities, mental health. She lives it firsthand every day. And as I've been becoming more and more acquainted with this gives me a good chance to discuss the priorities that this body will set. We came here with a supplemental budget for spending a lot of things. And as we heard, we continually hear, revenues are going down. This is a good chance for us to think about where our priorities are. And I think our priorities ought to be in taking care of people. We can do a lot of spending, funding, a lot of things, but I think the costs to this group are rising. We can't get away from that. There's more federal mandates, regulations. I just think I'm becoming more and more aware of this as constituents are calling and saying their places that their kids were staying or shut down. I just think this bill specifically is for the training that is going to be required, and then for the facilities, for the providers, and then they need to train their workers. So I'm shifting my priorities into a little bit different and taking care of the needs of these people in our state. And I would encourage us, I appreciate the appropriations, leaving the $1 million in there for this year, and we'll see how it's going. So I stand in support of this effort. Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listening to the debate and what we heard in appropriations yesterday, you know, these are vital needs that we have in the communities, and that these services benefit all of us in one way or another. The thing I'm hearing, though, is a lot of this money will go for things like training, developing those sorts of things with the various agencies that provide these services. And I'm kind of hearing in the background that we might be better off giving an increase to the amount of money that the providers receive for these services. They're being asked to do an awful lot more, it sounds like, with a little bit less. And so I would wonder if, you know, there needs to be something, some method, and I know this will surprise you coming from appropriations, of maybe providing more funding to those providers in a way that lets them directly help their clients. So I'd ask you to consider that as you consider where you stand on this bill. I've heard from some of the providers who indicate that, you know, more money may help them more than this bill. So just consider those facts when you vote and that of how you want the money spent.
Representative Crooker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to declare a conflict on this bill, but I would also like to add, as a parent of a child who's on the development disability waiver program that with the changes that have been made in law, it is very confusing, and there are a lot of steps that are going to need to take place for them to figure out how to comply with all the changes that that we've made. So they definitely do need assistance with that because of the extra burdens that are on them now.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While I am somewhat disappointed in the reduced appropriation, I was hoping that we would have assurance that this program could continue for longer than 1 year. That knowledge would help the providers and the recipients. I just wanted to add that the families I have talked to in my home county of people with developmental disabilities are very appreciative of the changes that they can look forward to and think it will be a benefit not only to them but to society as a whole, as these people are better integrated in, and it can potentially actually save money as these people with developmental disabilities are able to be active participants in society. Thank you.
Chairman Hirschman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of to share some of our testimony in committee, and a lot of changes, hasn't been any. We're going to put money in for a study, I hope, will be in the budget to rebase. For next year, we'll come back with an amount to increase so providers can be, the reimbursements to providers will be increased. That's the real issue out there. These folks who are working in tough jobs are making, you know, $9 an hour. That's the way it was expressed to us. The problem with this bill, this really doesn't do anything about that. And so we send $1 million of general fund money out to the health department to help develop business plans, and they're not in that. That's not their bailiwick, their expertise to develop business plans. And, you know, so I'm not going to speak against this bill. I think we keep it moving forward, but I think if we really want to help providers, you put money into the waiver and it gets matched. You know, we put $1 million of this general fund into the waiver, it gets matched by $1 million federal to go to providers. And, you know, it's a tough deal because it would be a tough budget item, be a tough negotiation thing, but I just want people to kind of be aware of kind of this whole real crisis out there with providers. And I'm not sure this bill is a solution to it. I think it's a little crumb kind of thrown out there to help a little bit. But the real issue is it's going to take a little more money, and that's a tough call we're going to have to all make. And so neither, you know, on for or against, I just kind of for an educational piece, and I think there's more to come on this issue, and so we'll all have to be really tuned into this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I so appreciate the most recent remarks about having to do our providers having to do more with less, and a lot of people, especially the newcomers to this debate, might not realize that 2 years ago we had over 600 individuals on a waiting list for community services. In an attempt to whittle down the waiting list, we mandated that more people go into community services for the same dollars that were being spent on the current served population. So the community service providers did not see an increase in money proportionate to the increase in new individuals receiving services. And now the federal government comes up with more mandates. We have all of these providers in the state, and there are about 600 of them. We have all these providers in the state who have to go back to the drawing board and learn how to live and operate under these mandates. And I think, okay, this is $2 million. I hope it gets extended. I hope that this is one of the state of Wyoming's priorities. These are the least among us. We owe them every bit of the resources that they need. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to, I support this bill, and I also support the amendment we just passed. This is a big issue in our state, and it's a very difficult issue for the families and the people who are getting the help with getting along and maybe living a little better life. I'm not sure the way this is written is what I was looking for exactly, but I think it's very important we keep this bill alive and use it as our vehicle to get to the solution or help on the solution that we're trying to put for the people who have these kinds of complexities in their lives and hardships.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Several things that I need to point out. First of all, we're talking about two different subjects. One is changing rules that require people to understand the rules, live the rules, and implement the rules into their programs. We had a conference in July in an eastern city in the state, and at that conference, one of the most respected men in this field said, as he's helped other states transition from the old way of doing business to where we are headed now, both by state law and federal law, takes usually 3 years and about $5 to $7 million. So we wrote this based proportionately on Wyoming's population. I do not think it is inappropriate for the Appropriations Committee to cut this. What they ask for is $1 million, which is more than we had designed for the first year of the program. If you go back and look at the original bill, $1 million for 1 year, and let's see what good it does before we appropriate more. For training. And the reason being is that we do need to put resources into funding. Now, this is the second subject. We do need to put resources into funding the providers. They are hurting. There's one correction I'd like to make. The waiting list was not funded entirely by cuts. We, as a legislature, put money into funding the waiting list, and it did. So we're talking about funding the training, which this bill does, and then when we get to the budget, let's fund the providers so that they can recover financially and continue to provide services. So it is two topics. It's two pots of money. I think that the budget cuts that the Appropriation Committee made was appropriate, because I think it is good to go back and look at that program after a year and see what happened with those grants that this bill provides. So did it do some good? Do we need to do more good? Was it the right amount of money? Was it too much money? And if you read the bill and go back and look, it also allows for money if we can convince the federal government that this is a true Medicaid expense, there's an opportunity to double it. So far, they're not budging. I'm not surprised. But on the other hand, it also allows for bequeathments and donations and foundations to put money into this account that can be continuously appropriated out of the account to add to these education dollars. So there is a opportunity for philanthropic organizations to contribute to the training of the providers. So please keep the issue separate. The training is necessary. We've been doing business on the one side of the Grand Canyon. We have moved through rules and regs, both state rules, regs, and laws, both state and federal, to the other side of the Grand Canyon, and this bill is the bridge of how to help people get from one side to the other. We have to implement the changes. We have no choice. providers have been doing business for the same way for a long time, and we have to help them through this if we want them to stay compliant with Medicaid rules, so that way can continue to provide services through the waiver. Thank you.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, I just ask you to turn to page 4 of your bill, line 8 and 9. In this bill, we're setting up an account. That account is where these initial state dollars would go to, and then any additional dollars, as the good chairman of Labor, Health, and Social Services talked about, contributions, grants, other dollars, including potential federal dollars someday. But then if you'll turn it over to page 5 and line 18, we repealed the section. So we repealed the ability to continue using the account and thus any of those other dollars. So this doesn't change the appropriation, the state dollar, the general fund appropriation. It just changed the ability for that count to stay in effect so that if new dollars come in, the program could continue. So I ask for your favorable consideration repealing this effective date in repealing this so that this program could continue with other dollars that may come available. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. I just really appreciate the conversation we had. It's very heartening to hear that the members of this body are grasping the complexities and the urgencies of the situation that we have facing this portion of our state and the people that help provide the services for them. So with that in mind, unless there's any other questions, I'd stand for the question.
Question being called. All in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 58 do pass, say aye. All opposed, no. House Bill 58 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion is
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 30, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 21, recommended do pass. House Bill 8, recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. House Bill 49, recommended do pass. House Bill 15, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 29, amended, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 58, amended and further amended and further amended. Representative Croker announced a conflict of interest on House Bill number 58. recommended do pass, signed by Representative Escobel, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Escobel. You did a wonderful job. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 109. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 25, cease and transfer priority list. Ayes 29, 1 excused. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 110. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund, ayes 26, noes 3, 1 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 112. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 34, Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership, ayes 29, 1 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 111. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 31, Department of Health Reports, dash cleanup, ayes 29, 1 excused. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 113. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 44, large project funding, ayes 29, excused 1, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 114. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendments, ayes 26, noes 3, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 115, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 52, Elections-Vote Centers and Electronic Poll Books, ayes 25, noes 4, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 111, Resort Liquor Licenses, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Barlow, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom have referred House Bill 31, Exemption for Water Utilities, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Somers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Committee announcements. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Thursday, January 22nd, upon noon recess in room H8 to consider the following bills. House Bill 46, Nix's Law, House Bill 78, Plant-Derived Plant Pain Medication, and House Bill 94, Parental Rights.
Vice Chairman Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee transportation, or committee number 8, Transportation, will meet in room H17, Thursday, January 22nd, 10 minutes after adjournment, to take up four following bills. House Bill 115, Vehicle Registration Timing. House Bill 106, Non-Consensual Towing Services. House Bill 124, Determination of Highway Rights-of-Ways on Federal Lands. And House Bill 120, Tribal License Plates. Thank you.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two, Appropriations, will meet upon adjournment today, January 21st, to continue supplemental budget bill markup, and will continue tomorrow at 8 a.m. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting on Friday morning, January 23rd at 8 a.m. in room 302 to hear two bills, House Bill 32, Hemp Extract Regulation, and House Bill 89, Wyoming Legal Tender Act.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number five will be meeting on Thursday, 8 a.m., the 22nd. To consider two bills, House Bill 56, the Wyoming Food Freedom Act, and also House Bill 70, the Omnibus Water Bill.
Vice Chairman Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee, number 10, Labor, would like to remind everyone, and especially the members of the committee, that the House Labor Committee will be meeting after adjournment today, in room 302 to hear testimony and information from Director Tom Forslund of the Wyoming Department of Health. Director Forslund will be discussing Senate File 66 and the share version of Medicaid expansion. Interested parties, please attend.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee on education number four will meet immediately after adjournment. That's today. On House Bill number 87, Content and Performance Standards of Education, and House Bill number 103, Merit Career Technical Scholarships.
Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in H-18 to hear the following three bills. House Bill 35, Boards and Commissions, Removal of Appointed Members. House Bill 69, Abandoned Buildings. And House Bill 41, Barbering License Requirements.
Representative Kirkbride.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a reminder about the prayer breakfast tomorrow morning at 6:30 at the Egg and I. Senators, House members, staff, and guests are all welcome. The guest speaker will be Rita Meyer. Hope to see you there. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just as a reminder to everybody, at 5 o'clock in room B63, we're going to have a presentation on debt deficits and the balanced budget amendment, room B63 at 5. Thank you.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I'd like to let the body know that the new black and white printer is online and working. And we would appreciate if you would try to print in black and white and not color, if possible. Thank you for that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will move the, I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, at the 22nd of January. And I would like to follow that with the list. As you'll see, your general file list, which should be in your right-hand drawer on top, is getting longer, and so we will try to move through those. We will also tomorrow on third reading have our first consent list. There are some that will be on regular third reading too, but this will be your first time to go through that exercise. So with that, Mr. Speaker, we have on general file House Bill 36, 73, 23, 25, 76, 82, 74, 100, 92, 85, 105, 28, 111, 31, and 62.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. We're adjourned until 10 o'clock.